conversations that you connect with and react to. SAFM.
While the 2024 Africa Children's Summit will be held in Johannesburg, and it brings the voices of children from across the continent to come and share their experiences on matters including children's rights, interventions by their own governments, but also what they see as challenges and proposed solutions. Anzio Jacobs is Acting Child Safety and Protection Manager at the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. Anzio, good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Good morning to your listeners. I apologize for not being on screen. I'm a bit ill today.
No problem. Thank you for still making time to speak to us. Dr. Shahida Omar is Executive Director at the Teddy Bear Clinic. Dr. Omar, good morning.
Good morning to you and all the listeners, and thank you for this great opportunity.
Anzio, firstly, tell us more about this summit and really what it aims to do.
So the Africa Children's Summit is a summit that seeks child participation in discussions that have to do with policy and the creation of frameworks, legal frameworks in which children and the rights of children are encapsulated. So the Africa Children's Summit in 2024 will be a delegation of 250 children from over 25 countries across the continent who will come together 250 in person and another 250 minimum online. Those 500 strong delegation of children will represent the views of children from across Africa. They represent various countries, and they will, at the end of the summit, produce an outcome statement, which will be a guiding document for policymakers and legislators at a national, a regional, and even at an international level this year.
Shahida, what is clear through an initiative of this nature is that we have to be intentional about profiling and seeking out the voices of children. So often we have conversations about them without them.
Indeed, Kathy, and this is what is so unique and so special about the African Children's Summit. This is an annual summit, it's a second edition, but we need to also appreciate that children are actively involved. They're not just being seen, they're not just being heard, but they're engaged. And there's a mutual reciprocal process where in the past children have been brought, you know, into conversations, into dialogues, but there's and you know, their resolutions have been submitted to different platforms, but there's been no follow-up. And I think if we look at the UNCRC and the African Union as well, this is something that they've raised with National DSD around the follow-up with children, ensuring that children's voices are actively heard and their proposed solutions by children are then mobilized and translated into action. But I want to also say what makes this summit so unique is that it's actually going to be led by a girl child, not only a girl child, but somebody with a disability. And and this summit has taken cognizance of children with disabilities, as 20% of the children represented will be children with disabilities. So again, the themes that have been outlined have been raised by children themselves. And the way forward, the president of the Children's Parliament is actually part of this process, including CSOs, including, of course, as we know that there are other stakeholders, but we have to applaud the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund for taking this up and bringing it into South Africa for the first time.
When we look at part of research that is done sort of extensively around vulnerable groups, so we'll have multiple reports on the state of women or even the state of refugees. Do we have the same, Anzio, when it comes to children? Do we have continental reports that focus on the state of children on this continent that can give us a broad picture of what the condition of children on this continent is?
Well, I mean, there are certainly a plethora of documents and lots of research on this topic. However, it falls a bit short when it comes to particularizing the instances of violence, particularly against children. It falls short a bit when we look at the level of analysis that is being done at a local level. What we are seeing as children are engaging in the lead up to the summit is that they are evidencing that in many instances, while they are captured within legislative frameworks and within policies, those policies aren't exactly addressing their lived realities. And so what's a real interesting portion of this conversation is that the children in this instance will be joined by the representative, the UNCRC, the Commission on the Rights of the Child. They'll also be met by the African Committee of Experts on the Rights and Wellbeing of Children, and they'll be led by, met by social development stakeholders as well as government stakeholders locally. This means that they'll actively be able to participate in the discussion, evidencing what is most critical to them as children. As you and your audience would well know, 50% of the African populace is now aged 15 and below. And so it's critical that we get these voices speaking about their lived realities, including all kinds of children, all categories of children. So this ACS is looking at children on the move. It's looking at children in labor. It's looking at children who are affected by sex trafficking. It's looking at children with disabilities. It's looking at the LGBTQIA plus communities. And all of these children being encapsulated in this conversation means that we will really hear the voices of children in ways which we haven't before.
We'll continue the conversation in a moment. We're looking at the Africa Children's Summit. Anzio Jacobs and Dr. Shahida Omar are on the line.
The Talking Point with Kathy Motlatlana, weekdays 9 a.m. till midday.
We continue the conversation on the Talking Point. We are looking at the state of children, and it's through the lens of what will be taking place at the Africa Children's Summit in Johannesburg. Anzio Jacobs is with the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, and Dr. Shahida Omar is Executive Director at the Teddy Pay Clinic. So, Shahida, if you are to perhaps describe what the biggest challenge, or maybe the biggest three challenges that you believe children are facing in our society today, what would those be?
Well, I think for me, the most important things are looking at children's physical health. So physical health, we need to actually break down into opportunities, access to immunization, the nutrition, food insecurity. One in five children are suffering from malnutrition. And I think that is something one cannot reconcile. No country, no child should be actually faced with that kind of situation. So, and access to physical health care, then looking at mental health, what we are seeing a lot of children grappling with, a lot of anxiety and struggling. We're seeing a lot of bullying. Looking at on the ground, a lot of bullying, cyber bullying, children suffering from managing these challenges within the school structures, educators not being able to deal with it appropriately and adequately. And we're finding that children are attempting and completing suicides as a result of that. So under mental health, you can see the huge challenges. But then also looking at the social determinants, the socioeconomic status, but all, you know, just looking at the opportunities and access to education. We know that children belonging to the quintile 1 to 3 schools are actually not even being able to get into school, despite the fact that they are, you know, exempted from school fees and uniforms. However, what we have found that many children are still deprived of that because they do not have access to that. So on paper, legislation, policy, everything seems to be great. But on the ground, on the practical level, children are denied those opportunities. Latrines are still existing in so many facilities. We just found a 3-year-old that died 2 days ago because of that. So the social determinants, preventative care, we know that antenatal care for mothers, the teenage pregnancies, the child pregnant learners that we would like to speak to, children who are birthing children, the lack of support, children are still falling out of the school system, the high attrition rate because of the lack of adequate and appropriate responses and support. Access to healthcare, I think that is something that we also need to be very aware of, because if we look at children's opportunity to healthcare, the opportunity to make informed positive choices, what we have learned is that the appropriate resources, the healthcare facilities, are not equipped, are actually not in a position to respond appropriately. Children are often afraid. There's fear of reprisal, fear of being reported, and therefore do not actually seek counsel or advice or guidance on contraception, on positive sexuality. So there are many risks. And I think, Anzio, you also spoke to the, reaching out to the hard-to-reach children, children missing on a daily basis, your street children, children who are on the move, your migrant, undocumented children who are deprived of opportunities and access to identity documents. These are, and of course, your children with the LGBTQIA plus children who are also victimized, the discrimination, the hate speech that still exists. So, Kathy, I can continue, but, these are the challenges, and I think this is the ideal platform where children, like you said, nothing about us without us. They are coming up with their own solutions and ensuring that it's going to translate into action. It's not just about being heard, but actually, what is the way forward where they're going to identify the solutions and ensure that they are heard and supported through this process? Leaving no child behind. I think that's important. The inclusivity. Previously, we've excluded the boy child as well, where, girls are victims. They're always the victims. Of course, the incidence and prevalence highlights that, but we cannot exclude the boy child who has also been victimized and has not been given permission to come forward and share that.
Sure. Shahida, there's so much that you touch on, and a lot of it really incredibly worthwhile for us to look at. I just want to start with the aspect of physical health and malnutrition and food insecurity. Anzio, one cannot imagine what it is to be a child, to not have food, and what do they do? What do children who are facing malnutrition, who are facing food insecurity, do?
Well, I mean, those are often the children that we leave behind. Unfortunately, when it comes to the provisions that are made by the state, they are generally not enough. But where we can find comfort is that civil society plays such a massive role in ensuring that those children that are often left behind are not left behind in terms of nutrition. At the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, our Sustainable Development and Thriving Program is specifically targeting children in hard-to-reach areas and ensuring that they get the requisite nutrition. We're doing that through engaging with policymakers and engaging with communities themselves. And we're also making interventions such as sustainable livelihood programs, which seek to use the little that is in community to address the issue of nutrition. Of course, there is so much of a way to go still. We note that children are often having one meal a day in the hard-to-reach areas. They are in school that are not adequately equipped or resourced. They are often in the poorest range of education and not meeting the basic educational requirements. So when you put that next to nutrition, the issues start to compound, because the child is not being adequately educated at a early childhood development phase, moves into primary school, into high school without the requisite skills, and that has an impact on employability in the long run. When we talk about nutrition, we are not talking about the day-to-day access alone, but what is missing in the framework holistically when we look at South African education as it relates to nutrition. The children themselves have chosen the topic of education because it encompasses so many of the thematics that we're discussing, and nutrition is definitely one of the points that they're raising.
I guess it also goes back to the high rates of stunting that we're seeing, not only in South Africa, but would you say that there's a prevalence of that elsewhere on the continent, Anzio?
Definitely, stunting comes up in other arenas as well. You'll know that we report on these issues at a regional level. We report them at the African Union Commission. Unfortunately, though, policy and practice fall far behind from each other. So you do see stunting in many regions, particularly Central Western Africa. That's something that comes up frequently in those conversations. It's not missing from Southern and Eastern Africa, but I think that in terms of stunting, we may be a little bit ahead, though our stats are not great. We are seeing significant amounts of stunting across the continent. And again, the crisis that we're dealing with and the reason we have to include children is because 50% of our population is 15 and below. This is the very same population that will become the international labor in the next generation. And if we are stunting their growth at very young ages, not enabling them to develop healthily with good educational system and safe guarding in place, we're going to sit with a crisis in the next couple of years.
We'll continue the conversation in a moment. We're talking to Anzio Jacobs. He's with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and Dr. Shahida Omar, who's with the Teddy Bear Clinic. It's 11:30, time for the latest news headlines.
The Talking Point with Kathy Motlatlana, weekdays 9 a.m. till midday.
All right, we continue the conversation on the Talking Point. We're focusing on the state of children. Anzio Jacobs and Dr. Shahida Omar are my guests. Shahida, I want to come to the second issue of mental health that you outlined. It is quite something to think about the fact that you've got young children that are living with such deep levels of anxiety and other associated symptoms to the point where they take their own lives or even attempt to take their own lives. What should that be telling us as a society?
Well, I think if we look at children, they are a microcosm of the macrocosm. They're mirroring the broader society. They're a reflection of what's going on out there. So these children feel totally helpless, hopeless, powerless, defenseless, and feel trapped and immobilized. So they're stuck and they cannot unstuck themselves. It's the glue that's, you know, keeping them stuck, and they see no way out. The only way out they feel is by actually, you know, terminating their lives, and get they see that as a resolution, which is actually devastating. It's a drastic measure. And that actually speaks to the fact that the drastic experiences, the trauma, calls for drastic measures. The reality is that these children do not feel safe. They do not see a trusting and safe environment or a secure individual or institution where they can actually reach out to. So it's the very systems that are supposed to protect our children and are failing to protect them because of lack of adequate resources. If we look at our school infrastructure, the lack of psychological services or support, and even where there is psychological support or social work support, the ratio is disproportionate. We're having 600, 1,000 children, one social worker or one psychologist or one social worker or psychologist actually supporting a cluster of schools, so supporting that district. So that actually it's inaccessible resources. The resources we say are there, but it's not realistic. So I think we are failing our children, firstly, even in relation to the positive discipline, where educators are not equipped in responding appropriately and adequately to children with regard to discipline, but it goes beyond the school context, where parents are also not equipped in responding positively to children. We're still finding corporal punishment, but a lot of the bullying and cyberbullying and the suicides that we've seen is also the online exposure, the media, technology, and online safety. We know that a lot of the children have access to devices. If it's not their own, it's also their friends that are utilizing devices that they would access. And children are falling prey to the sexting, the sextortion, and phishing and doxing, all sorts of threats that they are exposed to, and their images going viral where they cannot remove that. Once it's posted, it's out there. So the stigma, the humiliation, the ridicule, and the devastation for them is beyond something that they can actually control. And we find that because of the inaccessibility and availability of resources, children fall prey to destructive measures, which results in the loss of many innocent lives that could have been saved and rescued.
Ansio, the sense that I'm getting is that with all of the evolution that we've had in society, including, you know, the involvement of the use of technology and how that has also evolved over the years, it's that while all of these things have been significant in terms of efficiencies and convenience for how we run our lives, they also, on the other end, pose significant threats, especially for children.
I mean, they do. And I think that we fall short of imagining what kinds of threats technologies pose. I mean, we're thinking about things as people interacting and grooming children online on online platforms. We think about these online platforms being used to identify where children are. And that is a great risk because abduction is a growing issue in our context. Human trafficking is a huge one. And human trafficking finds expression more frequently, it seems, these days on online platforms. So what the children have done is they've asked us to particularly focus on AI and the pitfalls of AI as part of their conversation. But more than that, we have to think that the wrongs or the malaise that we see on artificial intelligence and on the internet are only a piece of the problem. Children are also asking us to think about how these mechanisms, these technological mechanisms, are also excluding children from education. Think about the fact that during COVID, when so many children who were resourced sufficiently went online for their education, we left a significant proportion of children behind in that process who couldn't access those same technologies and have now subsequently fallen behind in their education. So it is a massive discussion to have. AI has many components and features to it that we may not have thought about before. And the advent of technology is posing new risks to children. This will be part of the conversation of the ACS this year.
For the parents and guardians of children who are listening to this conversation and while wondering, what is it that I can do to make sure that the world is a safer place, maybe for the children that are in my care, but also just for the children around me. Ansio, what advice would you have for parents and guardians today? Because some of these issues and pitfalls are things that they themselves may not have lived through, may not even have experienced.
Precisely. I think that we're in a different age and technology has really changed the nature of how parents engage with their children. Children are increasingly learning things that their parents don't want to teach them online, and that has major risks associated to it. But I think that if parents really want to equip their children, a good place to start is by informing children what their rights are, how it is that they can engage in policy discussions, because once they're able to do so, they're able to mitigate risks that are associated with being out, for example, in public spaces. They will be more informed about how it is that they enjoy their rights. So they'll be informed about mechanisms and frameworks in place to protect them. But I think beyond that, parents really need to be involved at a school level again. I think something that was a hallmark of the 90s into the early 2000s, before we had this kind of bang in technology, was that parents were actively getting involved in the day-to-day school lives of their children. Children are currently complaining that many parents don't have the time because they're working, they're stressed, they're overburdened. And the result of that is that children are on their way to school being neglected, on their way to school being harmed, reaching the school environment and experiencing further harm. And so if we aren't talking to children, we simply won't know the challenges that they're facing on the day to day. The mechanisms that are in place by government are there. They just need to be strengthened. And unfortunately, that has more to do with the fiscus. But I think on the day to day, when parents start engaging their children, they'll be exposed to some of the difficulties that those children are going through. Many children just want their parents to be present. And that's the first point where parents can intervene. If the parents want more information, the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund, as well as the Teddy Bear Clinic, both have websites and there's information freely available. The types of policies that parents should be engaging with are available on the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund website. And also we'll be talking to children about these issues at the Africa Children's Summit in 2024 that's happening between the 9th and 12th of August.
Shahida? I'll ask you the same question. What advice would you have for the parents and guardians?
Parents and caregivers out there, it's not learning new tricks or new techniques. It's going back to the basics, going back to that spirit of Ubuntu, family, kinship. And I think if we just go back in time where parents had less access to resources, engaging children more actively with daily chores when, you know, cooking together. So engaging in household chores, and that actually also gives an opportunity to talk, something that children have found they've been excluded. There isn't that opportunity to connect. We've become more disconnected by using devices and assigning roles and responsibilities and ensuring that children are actually left alone to do their homework and give them specific time. I think bringing them back, engaging with them, involving them with whatever work that needs to be done. So eating together, it may not be a fancy dinner or lunch or whatever, but getting them to participate and speaking to them like Anzio said. I think that's the one thing. It's not just the verbal engagement, but looking at what the child is saying. Oh, what is it that my child is not saying? So what am I speaking to? The body language. Using opportunities, your routine opportunities, breakfast time, traveling to school, fetching the child from school. So actually hearing. So what is the highlight of your day today? What wasn't the highlight? What made you feel yucky? What didn't you like today? What would you like to see differently tomorrow? But basic questions to actually allow the child and give the child permission to say, hey, my parent is actually interested in my feelings, how I feel. And my parent is actually wanting to assist me. So I think that availability, the emotional availability, what we are doing today is physically we are very available, rushing, fetching children, buying devices for them, getting their stationery, getting everything organized for them, but failing to connect emotionally with the child. And I think that's where we're losing the plot. Thank you.
Dr. Shahida Omar and Zio Jacobs, let me thank you both for your time and your contribution to this conversation. It leads us into the end of the show for today. Up next is the book reading, The Talking Point. Back with you again tomorrow between 9 and midday.